Empower Radio presents Art as Worship with Vanessa Lowry.
Welcome to Art as Worship. Each week we feature stories of artists and explore their process of creation. I'm your host, Vanessa Lowry, and I'm thankful that you're joining me today. On this show, I talk with artists of various faiths, working in a wide range of mediums, on the common theme of how they use inspiration and creativity as an expression of their spirituality. Learn how their art is an expression of their own connection to however they name God, Jehovah, Allah, Source, the universe, the great mystery, or something else. My hope is that these stories will inspire your creative efforts and your own spiritual expression. My guest today is Stanton Lanier. He's the pianist of peace. Pianist and composer Stanton Lanier offers a unique concert experience combining signature melodies, inspiring life stories, and audience interaction. A one-time chemist and financial planner, four of his seven albums were produced by William Ackerman, Grammy-winning founder of Windham Hill Records, including Christianity's Today's 2011 Notable Sacred Music, 1,000 Years, and ZMR Awards 2009 Best Holiday Album, December Peace. Stanton's music can be heard on the Weather Channel, Sirius XM Spa, Music Choice Soundscapes, and many other outlets. He's also the founder of Music to Light the World, a nonprofit 501c3 organization with a vision to offer God's peace and rest in a hurried world. Their Get Music Give Hope has led to 20,000 CDs being donated to cancer centers and hospitals, offering hope and healing to patients. Welcome, Stanton.
Thank you, Vanessa. It's great to be with you.
You know, I think it's interesting that you started out as a chemist and a financial planner and now are a full-time musician. Can you tell me a little bit about how that happened?
It is an interesting story. I come from an analytical father and an artistic mother. So I'm the confliction of art and science.
Or you're just a very balanced brain.
Yeah, it's hard to stay in the middle. But I grew up taking piano lessons, but I didn't think I could do my music or basketball, which was my other love, you know, for a living. So I went off to Georgia Tech, so I thought, to be an engineer, changed to chemistry and got an MBA, and then was in the business world 15 years, but playing the piano all the time and writing some songs. And that led to the year 2000, writing an instrumental melody for the first time, and it would become my first CD in 2001. So
at what point did you decide, I'm going to leave this left brain world and do music full time?
It was a gradual process. I had written songs in the 90s, but not like I did in the 80s. Life was getting fuller and busier with a wife and young family. I was at Ronald Blue as a financial planner, ended up being about 10 years there. But 5 years into that, as I, in my faith journey, was longing to hear God's voice, like what would he have me to do and what was my purpose, I really felt on purpose in the financial planning. And he had really clearly called me to that. But as I was listening for his voice, there was a rising up of the music in me in a new way. And it was a new idea that instead of writing songs, to write instrumental melodies and use scripture as the inspiration. Just to express the peace and rest and hope of God. And I did three CDs as a financial planner between 2000 and 2004. And that's when something had to give. We were realizing, you know, the music had been heard on the Weather Channel. We had orders from across the country happening. I was going by the post office on the way to work. But it wasn't going to be an easy choice. But were we supposed to do this full time? So this 5 years it took to sort of discern that for me and my wife. And August of 2004, Music Light the World became full-time. So,
oh, that's awesome. So I know now that you think of yourself as an artist. At what point in your life did you start thinking of yourself as an artist?
I'd have to say at an early age, maybe because of my mom being an art major, my dad he was a PhD chemist. Uh-huh. But music was in our home. We had an old upright piano. I started piano lessons when I was six. And then maybe creating as an artist came more in middle school, early high school. I was at a choir camp, and they had a songwriting little workshop, and you had to write a song. Like, you couldn't leave without making one up. So my first song that got written was sort of forced a little bit, but that was like age 14, and then I wrote a whole bunch in high school. So that was just part of my life outside of academics and basketball and friends and whatever. I would be at the piano and compose sometimes and play classical or popular or whatever.
And so those first songs that you composed, were those instrumentals as well, or did they all actually have lyrics to them?
They were all had lyrics from age 14 till the year 2000, you know. So the very first one was called Friends, and it was about the friends and specialness of relationships and friends in my life. Sort of my Elton John moment, I call it, was as a high school senior, I wrote a song called Forevermore for my graduating class, and they put a piano on the 50-yard line of the football field, and I had the microphone and a couple thousand people there and sang this song Forevermore about the memories from high school and how we would take them with us forevermore, but even though we were going different directions and, you know, different places in our lives. So I've never sung on a 50-yard line since the 12th grade, since high school graduation. But
not everybody's done that.
Right, right. It was a neat part of the story.
So I'm interested how that experience, sounds like it was your first experience of performing in front of this huge crowd of people, how that has compared to the way that you perform now. If the emotions, if you have some similar emotions, or if it's, yeah. how that's different now.
Well, somehow all the recitals as a from first through 12th grade, you know, there were pianist recitals every year, and then playing on the football field. I was the leader of some clubs on campus or organizations, you know, where I had some speaking opportunities. But as a young person, you're maturing in that, being confident in front of an audience, whether you're saying something or playing something. My right leg used to shake in high school when I had a recital. I would get really nervous. But through the years, this idea of surrender, which is what happened in my career life, when I sort of surrendered that and let it go, then I found really a calling with the financial planning and now with the music. When you surrender before a talk or a performance, then all those nerves can get out of the way and you can just be who you are for that moment. So I think it's all of our life story kind of works together to mold and shape us, you know, and prepare us. So a lot of experiences have led to today. And now I've played over 500 times for 60,000 people, something like this. So, but every one is special and unique, and it's could be a first time for that person hearing or listening. So I surrender it, and I have kind of get a sense of peace about it. And it's just, for me, I think of an audience of one, you know, from the faith perspective, that it's sort of just me playing for God, like in my living room by myself. But there happen to be people joining us to enjoy.
People just listening in, kind of like today.
They're listening in, right.
That's right. So do you have a process that you use to reach that place of surrender?
Yes, there are different aspects to that. That word, there's a few others that are special to me now. Silence and solitude and surrender and simplicity. And it's a little book I had read years ago. Just those four things help in my faith journey to have intimacy with God. And if you practice those, then it helps you to hear His still small voice more. And for me, there's a getting quiet and getting away, having some solitude and surrender, and then sort of the simplicity of childlike faith. I love that theme. And then inspiration can happen, or just ideas of, you know, God's voice speaking into my life about decisions or what I should be doing with my day, or in terms of the art, what I should create, or ideas for new melodies, or ways to present it uniquely, or all the different aspects of from the presentation to the creation.
So how often do you compose new songs?
Well, there's 82 that I've done since May of 2000. So it was averaging about every month and a half or two. Now that my seventh album came out last summer of 2011, and there's so many people that haven't heard my music, that there's a lot of people that have now. It's really growing, but there's a real focus on performance this year to go share with as many new audiences and places as I can, just so that I can share some of these great melodies that have happened that have become favorites out there for listeners. So I've taken a little bit of a, just taking the pressure off, if you will, to not have to write a song every month or two right now. But I have a few things that I'm working on and a few themes. And what's happened for me now is the the piano, I would say, was always a refuge for me, but the studio has now become that way, and that took a while, but on the seventh recording, there was a song that happened overnight, so I was up there to record some pre-planned music, and I needed one more song, and even some components of other songs happened on the fly, so to speak, like in the studio. So I have a greater confidence now that, and artists know this, you know, something can be inspired and happen fairly quickly if it's meant to be, you know, and it doesn't take a long time. So I'm kind of at rest with this, you know, that I don't need a year and a half to write 10 good songs necessarily, but
right.
It's just a matter of the rhythm and flow of presenting and performing and sharing and running Music to Light the World and then creating music. So it's a lot of hats to wear and, you know, different things to do. So
it sounds like a lot of your work in your days have elements that don't necessarily have the artistic element to that. Is that hard for you to balance? Is that hard to juggle those business things of running the foundation and running the, traveling and that kind of thing with the actual artistic development of songs and being in the studio?
Yeah, it can be challenging sometimes. In any work that we do, and I believe we all have a passion for a couple things, you know, that we can be passionate about our work, but still 100% of what you have to do isn't maybe your favorite. You know, there's going to be aspects that are. One creative outlet for me is with projects and material, like with our website or with communications or our email list and creating or Facebook or just, you know, stories and sharing creatively with people that are following and interested. So that kind of comes in each day or each week, something creative, but it's not musically creative. So when I get to sit at the piano and play for an audience, that becomes a real treat because there's something about living in the moment. And that may tie to that childlike faith theme. You know, they're not thinking about so many things or the future. But when I'm at the piano, I'm in that moment because I'm just going to play that song and deliver that message in music. So that becomes has become richer because of the different things going on. But creativity can play out in our lives, you know, in a number of ways. It doesn't have to be the one art place that we might have as a gift or talent, but other work that we're doing too.
Well, and I find that too. I mean, I think that there are so many ways of capturing that creative juice in anything that you do, and I think that's really such a gift to be able to be in the moment and find that moment of joy in making dinner or whatever it is that you need to do during the day, and figuring out what is it about this that it's juicing me up right now.
Right. What a cool thing on that's hit me a few years ago was to be more of a creator than a consumer. So that's just a neat thought for your listeners. Like, how can I be a little bit more creative than consumptive? Because we're in such a culture and society that feeds us things to do and to watch and listen or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's some way to, like you said, even with cooking a meal, like, what can I do creatively for my family tonight or something different? And this is a joke, and I'm cooking is becoming a hobby for me, but I'm way behind my wife. Okay, I'm not, but it's like my kids say, "Yeah, Dad's cooking is one of his hobbies." But you know, I make waffles on Saturday morning. But I'm getting better, and it's kind of exciting because that's another little creative outlet, like you're saying.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier that the music that you compose now, or a lot of the music you've composed, has been inspired from Scripture.
Yeah.
So
can
you describe that a little bit more?
I'd love to do that, because that became a really interesting question from the beginning. Like, how does instrumental music do that? Because you're not singing. Like,
right.
So how can it do? And it's turned out to be it's roughly half and half. And I don't have a piano with me, but I'm gonna sing a melody.
Okay.
Fairly poorly, maybe, but it says, "Do not be anxious about anything. Do not be anxious about anything." That's from a verse in Philippians that says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and then the peace that passes all understanding will guard your hearts and minds." It's a rich one because of that anxiety, analytical wiring that I have, the science engineer. And that became a melody called Thanksgiving. and it was on my very first CD. It was like the fourth song that I wrote in the summer of 2000. And I re-recorded it for December Peace, the award-winning Christmas holiday album, and slowed it down a little bit and added some English horn, like an oboe sound. So that's what I would say a lyrical inspiration. About half the time, I'm taking the words, and part of the words is becoming the song because of the songwriting background I had. So the piano is singing the melody. Now the other half are a theme, and I'm reflecting on a passage or a verse, and I'm composing at the same time, and I'm trying to express that theme. So there's a song called Peace, for example, and I just wanted it to be peaceful, but I wanted it to not just be that, but really deep, really powerful and peaceful. And that's become a signature melody. It was inspired by a little girl that died of leukemia, and she wasn't quite 2 years old. The night she passed away, I got a phone call, and I couldn't sleep, and I started writing that song because there was a piece that she knew that she would want us to know. And there's a John 14:27 is a great verse for that. But it's become one of my signature melodies, and it began the process of giving the music to cancer patients and hospitals and all this that's come to be known as Give Music, Give Hope. Started with a little girl and one song in 2004, 2005. So
wow, that's really powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we said in your bio that you've given out thousands.
Like 20,000. In the last couple of years, it's been 20,000. So it's kind of gone from a little bit, little by little, to sort of bigger and bigger. And we have a goal and dream that it could reach 25 or 30,000 this year, because there's a lot of people hurting, and there's relationships starting to happen where people know somebody or people are part of an organization that serves, like I've learned at the, different clinics might see a few thousand people a year that have a certain type of cancer. But Beads of Courage is a key partnership with us, and they're in a lot of places in Atlanta, but in 106 hospitals around the country, where they have arts and medicine therapy for children and families to make necklaces that tell their medical story.
Oh, wow!
And every bead symbolizes something on their journey, and it gives them an identity with their story. And the little girl's nurse, her name was Haley, that I wrote Peace for. It's been 7 years later now, but she directs Beads of Courage, and they serve 10,000 children, and they're growing. So that we gave those 10,000 children a specially packaged CD called Rivers of Light, Music for Hope and Healing, that took some of the selections from my last four albums and put them in a one-hour sequence where it would take the family. Through that child, the family and loved ones and friends and caregivers all get to hear this music, and it takes them on a journey of toward hope and healing. I call it a drop in the bucket, because it's not the physical part like the doctors and nurses are doing, but there's a spiritual and something in the heart and mind, to offer hope and healing there. So,
well, and I think healing is such a bigger word than just the physical.
Yeah.
Than the physical part. I mean,
right.
I think that we all go through things where we need healing from an emotional and spiritual standpoint that then can translate into our body or not.
Right.
But it's such a big part of any journey of figuring out, how to have parts that let you heal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's a lot of parts. Powerful to hear you describe that. It just gives me goosebumps that your music is creating this place of healing for so many people.
Yeah, it's been surreal at times, and just very humbling, just amazing, because you don't know exactly what the future holds, and you're just trying to do what you're supposed to do. The really funny thing is, when I was 14, my mom got me to volunteer at the local hospital in Milton, Florida. That's where I went to high school, and I was a candy striper. Like that,
I didn't know that men could be candy stripers.
I didn't either. I mean, I didn't know what I was getting into. I was the only guy, and there was all these girls, and I had a candy striper patch. But I've always hated the needles, and the sight of blood. And I fainted in the hospital, and I fell 6 feet back and hit my head on the floor, and that was my last day. And now my music is given to hospitals. It's really the irony and the humor is because I really don't like hospitals. But then my music, and I'm so okay that that's what I'm supposed to do, I'll do it. So.
It is funny how the things circle back around. I'm like, all right, okay.
Right.
So when you, at what point did you have this vision for Music to Light the World, the organization that you've started?
Yeah, it started from the first CD, I said something like soothing melodies to calm the, like lift the spirit, like calm the soul, lift the spirit, something like this. So I was experimenting with the theme and the expression of my music instrumentally, you know, what it was meaning, because it was Walk in the Light and Still Waters and Draw Near. Those were the first three titles, and it was just kind of forming for me. If this was going to be something we would do, I was at a place in my life where I wanted to provide for my family, and I wanted to, if there was a blessing in the music, I wanted to receive that, you know, whether it just touching other lives or if there was some measure of success to have to it. But the definition of success changed for me, you know, in my 30s, to where it's about making a difference and being living a significant life, you know, rather than just making a lot of money or the things we sometimes think of in our culture. So instead of striving for the worldly type success, I just wanted to be on purpose with it. And that's, we did it as a nonprofit organization to sort of let it, and the world was the umbrella. That's what I started seeing, because there's no language barrier with instrumental music.
Right.
So, and then I, music to light the world, it just, now it's so much a part of me. But at the time, when I put that in as a domain, like it was there, musictolightetheworld.com, musictolightetheworld.org. It's been the same way with pianistofpeace.com.
Wow.
And givemusicgivehope.com and .org. That's the giving of the CDs to cancer and all. So it's sort of like these, God's gone before to just reserve a little place. But as I've tried to be in tune and in step with that, there it was, you know. And so the heart is to light the world with his peace and hope to listeners around the world, and let that be his umbrella. And that's how it started. That's how the name came, you know.
So have you, as you've seen those ways that God has gone before and kind of opened that path for you, has it gotten easier for you to kind of trust that that will continue to happen?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's, I think we think in our human condition, like a little bit more success or things going a little bit better, that it'll be easier to believe that's going to happen the next time around. But you're always kind of tested and stretched. It really takes faith. Every day, every week, every month, you know, every year, we're in our eighth year here. And I had a thing about the Super Bowl in January, just because 2011 was kind of a Super Bowl year, the way it finished. It was so amazing, the fourth quarter and the Christmas season and just people's contributions, because we're half supported through donations and half through music sales and performances.
Right.
So when you've had this incredible year, so and you start a new year, you're supposed to go win the Super Bowl again. Like, that's what the fans, it's like, and the Giants, you know, came into Lambeau Field and upset the 15-1 Packers. And I did a blog on this about what are the Giants in your life that are, is it fear? Is it uncertainty? You know, what's a giant that's keeping you from pressing through to do something you feel like you're supposed to do and trust the outcome, not knowing what it's all going to be. So that's a really, you can see that's a, been a theme for me here early in this year, because we don't know exactly what the future holds, and we want to give our best effort, but we have to rest in it too, and, you know, get a good night's rest and love our family and love people well and be about what we're supposed to do. So it's an integrated life, you know. It's not just it's not one thing. It's hard to balance all the spokes. You kind of have to.
I love that you answered that way, because I find that in my own life too. I, you know, grew up going to Sunday school, and I remember thinking to myself over the years, well, how could the disciples be so, they could be so short-sighted? You know, Jesus had done all these miracles, and then they would mm-hmm. question him what seemed like the next day. They would like, yeah, well, we're scared again. And I thought, how can that be? And then as I've gotten older and I've lived through things in my own life, I think
right.
I see miracles happen all the time, and then I still get scared and think, oh, yeah, how's this going to work out? And
yeah,
I'm just now starting to get to the point where I can remind myself mm-hmm. that miracles have happened to me my whole life, and
yeah,
that there's no reason that they won't continue to happen.
Right.
And to just, you know, get into that place
right.
of surrender that you were talking about earlier. So
yeah, that's great. And see, you can see that. Do not be anxious about anything.
Right.
I mean, that's, for me, that's today, tomorrow, the future, you know, just, trust, yes, faith. It's childlike faith, you know, to trust. But there, God will encourage us and surprise us where it shows he's with us, you know. and it keeps us going. You know, we it's like there's all these things happening out there. Like from your program, you're touching more than you know, but right. you hear from a few.
Right.
And that means, you know what, I can do this another day. It's the same way with, like, the music is heard by millions of people. I can't believe that, but, like, that's with all the ways things happen out there now on the computer and the internet and radio and TV, all the, and concerts and CDs and downloads. And I just hear from one person, and that's like, you know what, I can wake up tomorrow morning.
It's making a difference to somebody.
Right. It's one person at a time, one day at a time, you know.
Well, and I think the other part of that is, you know, with a creative... any kind of creative endeavor, you're stepping into things that maybe haven't been done before or haven't been done this way before. And so there is an element of, you know, finding that place of trust to be able to even step into creative paths.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's back to that, the childlike nature and sort of being naive, like not knowing how something works. It can be a good thing. I didn't know. I was a chemist, MBA, financial planner. I didn't know how to market and be in the music business or whatever. And everybody that did said, well, that ain't going to work.
Right.
But it was, other things were working. And this is how, there's another special verse to me, how God's ways are higher than our ways. Like he's unconventional. He can bypass the whole system if he wants to and do in his way. And it's like, It'll blow your mind, but that's that affirmation. There's an inner affirmation of being, you know, following our heart, and then there's an outer affirmation as people respond, and it can be very unconventional and very different and amazing. So it can be good to not know how everything's supposed to work, you know.
Thank you. It's nice to know.
Okay.
So how has your art affected your spiritual evolution, or how has your spiritual evolution affected your art?
Yeah, that was a great one that you had shared beforehand, just to think, you know, on that, which I did, because they go together. See, because the scripture inspires my music, and the 1990s for me, which would be my 30s, I'd say, you know, were in general, was really longing for truth and hearing God's voice. So I was digging into scripture and verses just because I wanted to hear. And that's still vital and a huge part of my life. But in my 40s, I've been growing in grace, because grace and truth, you know, and Jesus was filled with 100% grace, 100% truth. And see, we can't do 100% of two things. We can't, as people. So we're imperfect at it. But to love people well and to have grace and to learn people's story and to share my story, is my life more of a story or more of an argument? And for a long time, I took life too seriously. I thought I had to defend or sort of like our life was more of a problem to solve than an adventure to live. So now life's an adventure to live, and it's more of a story. So God has inspired all this music, and then he comes back around and just keeps showing me that he's bigger than I think, and that he doesn't need me. Like that to express his grace and love toward people and accept them and just share our stories and let the music meet people wherever they are spiritually and just be enjoyed by them, that they can just love the beauty and the inspiration, and maybe something sparks in their heart creatively or in their spiritual journey, you know, to draw closer. So it really is like a circle more than a, you know, A and B. Before and after or whatever. It's really worked together, and you know, life is a process of growing and learning and trusting. So,
and it sounds like just your journey up to this point is an example of, we don't have to figure every piece out before we start.
Right. I would have been the classic example of having it all planned out. You know, whenever things didn't go my way, it'd be really angering and frustrating for me. You know, grit teeth, clenched fists, because you want it to go my way or be in control. And You have to have more open hands and receive, and you know, that's a grace posture to give grace and receive grace. There's an openness there, instead of a strive, you know, head down, clenched fists and teeth, and go strive, you know, to achieve, rather than just abide and rest and surrender and trust. And that those things don't mean great things can't happen. It's just a different perspective, you know,
right.
to let go rather than hold on so tight. Yeah.
So how do our listeners find out more about you and buy your music? And
well, I guess the best place to start is with my name. That's what we learned, even though it's Music to Light the World and all the other things we've talked about. StantonLanier.com is just a great
So can you spell that for
Yes. S-T-A-N, like Stan, and then T-O-N. So Stanton, and then Lanier is L-A-N-I-E-R. So StantonLanier.com. And through that site, we're supported the most, like with music, MP3 albums, sheet music, piano books, CDs, donations. But the music's on iTunes, Amazon, you know, we're on Facebook. There's all the places you might think, Twitter, you know, it's all out there to be discovered and found. But that's a great starting place, yeah.
That's awesome. So I can't believe we're out of time already,
yeah.
But is there any one last thing that you would like to tell our listeners before we close up?
Well, since we're not having a concert together, I love to interact with the audience, and I'll take words from the audience, and we'll make up a song on the spot.
Oh, how cool is that?
So at the piano, I get people, like four different people call out a word, and they have different syllables, you know, and those syllables, the words will become melody, and we'll make up a melody right there together. So since I can't do that, the reason I do that in a concert is to inspire creativity in the audience, because everybody has one or two things that they're creative at. And I say it can be gardening, it can be math, it can be science, it can be teaching, painting, music, you know, all kinds of things. So just to be creative today, just nurture your creative gift and let it be a blessing to others.
Thank you so much. I wish we had, you know, two more hours to talk to you.
It's been great, Vanessa.
It really has been interesting and really has been a great show. So thank you so much, Stanton. And if you can tell our listeners one more time how they can find you.
Just go to StantonLanier.com or search my name on Google. Yeah.
Great. So thank you to our listeners. I welcome your suggestions or comments on this or any of our shows. You can find links to all of our shows on Empower Radio and on our website, artisworship.net. Please come and share your stories of Art is Worship on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/artisworship, or suggest an artist that we should interview. Listen in next week as we talk with another artist about their creative process and how it connects with their spiritual journey. May you have an inspired and creative week. Namaste.